roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world inside our beautiful home in Las Vegas, Nevada, it's the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goz. Ari's co-host. What's up, Goz? On a Monday, May 18th.
What up, Holmes?
Not much. It's all over. Three events and 8 days. Done. Lots of news, lots of results, new storylines, new paths to titles, broken dreams, controversy, everything we could have asked for. I loved it.
I already miss it. I already do. Yeah. It's already odd that there's not one in 2 days.
Exactly. Now, in the summer, the schedule might pick up because they're going to have Dana White Contender Series, Fight Island, and I think they'll come back home to the state of Nevada and get things going. So I think we might get a little bit of what you just said. But for now, let's stick to these three events in Jacksonville, Florida. Thank you, Jacksonville, Florida, for hosting the UFC. From all accounts, things went well, minus one little hiccup, which we'll discuss. And we're going to discuss the results from Saturday night's card. It was on ESPN. Yeah, controversy there too. Lots of news to discuss as well that's been floating around for the last few days. Some good stuff, though. So buckle up, folks. Here we go. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show again on a Monday, May 18th.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Goz, we're off and running. On Saturday, we had a fun card, man. I really liked it. Except, once again, there was some controversy here and there, but I've loved controversy for the past 13 years of doing the show, so it ain't going to trip me up like others. But let's start at the top. Alistair Overeem defeated Walt Harris. TKO punches, round two. Some are saying this fight could have maybe stopped in round one when Walt Harris was beating up Alistair Overeem. And, of course, the side plot here is Walt Harris coming back for the first time after the loss of his stepdaughter, Anaya, who last year was kidnapped and then murdered. So he fought with a heavy heart, and it's not like everybody was against the Ream. It's just that we all knew how special it would be for Walt Harris to win, you know, for his family and probably to dedicate the fight to his daughter. But it didn't go down that way. Now, that said, it was still some beautiful moments. Both participants were very classy to each other. You know, Walt still had an opportunity to thank his community and the people around him and express himself, you know. So that said, Goz, can you talk about that? You know, talk about a little bit about Walt and the side story there with him fighting for the first time for his daughter, Anaya. And then also the result of the fight. Did you see it as a controversial ending or were you okay with it?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a roller coaster of emotions for probably Walt Harris and the people watching. it's hard not to root for him in that situation. It sucks that you have to fight. I mean, that's your living. So I think if you watch the fight, Walt just seemed very, very tired. And granted, he had just dealt out a barrage himself.
Yeah.
But that was still round one, and that could have just been the emotional highs and lows of everything catching up. So I felt bad for him in the sense that I think he needed a fight like this to just get back to normal. But I don't know that it's fair to say that first fight back is going to be a true representation of everything Walt can do. Because that was a lot to ask for. And
Reem's no joke, man.
Reem's no joke. And as far as the stoppage goes, I'm one of those guys that I was saying, I think this fight should be stopped. And right as I was saying that is when Overeem started to show life. And so this is one of those situations where for as much as we come down on refs and judges, I'm going to say I was wrong then because I felt pretty confident. Like, I think this needs to be stopped. It could be stopped now. And it turns out I think that might have been the right call to let it go. But I wouldn't have been shocked if you stopped it. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. I think it would have been bad aesthetically because I think Reem would have just popped up and been okay. But I wouldn't have said that was the wrong call if they would have stopped it.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things occurred to me while you were talking. One is, man, you know, when you think about it, when it comes to family, fighting is the side plot, the side story. You know, his life was that as a husband and father, and every few months, you know, he goes and does this thing where he punches somebody in the face. I hope people understand. Maybe my verbiage, I hope that didn't come off insensitive, that it was just some little side plot, you know, or whatever. Oh, yeah, one time, you know, in the gym, these guys had a little bit of an issue. No, obviously, that thing took over MMA and even mainstream media, I would see it. So it was a big deal. The loss of his daughter is a big deal. It's just that what I meant was the fight itself had... It wasn't like, for example, when Angela Hill and Claudia Gadelha fought. That was the fight. That was the news right there. Here, we all kind of knew what had happened and the story behind Walt. And the other thing I was thinking about goes is, have you ever watched a 4x100-meter relay? Of course you have.
Yes. I love all it. Right.
Have you ever seen when the first person with the baton is running and they hand it off to the second person? Have you ever like observed track and field and how all that works?
Yeah.
All right. Yes. So have you ever noticed there's a couple lines that distinguish the handoff zone?
Mm-hmm.
That's what MMA reffing is. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of teams that are really good at timing it perfectly so that the person that's running with the baton, as they're extending their arm, the other one's already taken a few steps. And I think they hear stick and they reach out with the correct arm, because if I have it in my right arm, it'd be dumb to put it in your left hand. So we've already coordinated this. We've trained for years. And I say stick, you stick out your right hand, we time it right, boom, you take off. And so by the time you get to the Olympics, there's a lot of fast runners everywhere. But it's the ones that can execute that a little bit smoother that might actually, that's where you get that upset, where a team that has traditionally always lost to the U.S. or Jamaica or Russia or whatever, they happen to have that great, you know, those handoffs. And I think that's what MMA is like. There's this zone where it's a little bit too early of a handoff and a little bit too late of a handoff, but it's still legal. The race goes on, whoever did it, medals or whatever, that's the result. Mm-hmm. And then there's outside the zone where I guess it's more of a hard line, black and white in track and field. They go, that's it, disqualified. In MMA, all we go is, that's poor, that was horrible, you know, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't really change the result, yeah. But that's just it. There's just this window, you know what I mean? And I was okay with it. I was okay with them going. I knew Walt needed to do a little bit more. I would have been okay with it if they stopped it. No problem, would have slept like a baby on Saturday night. But I felt like he was okay in letting it go.
I find it interesting if referees carry momentum from other fight cards, what people say in the media and all that. So I wonder if that ever registers too, where referees are either afraid to let it go too far, or you know, they get in there, they stop it early. I wonder if that happens.
Well, Herzog, he apologized for Wednesday night. He was the one in the Teixeira-Smith fight. Mm-hmm. He apologized and said, it's on me. Took it all on him. So I was watching him, especially on Saturday night.
Me too.
In his bouts. And that said, I think I was watching the other refs too. But I didn't notice anything different. I mean, what are they going to do? Get that much closer to the action? Or, you know what I mean? I think it's just experience. But, dude, they belong there, man. You know, it's not like they're pretty much nothing they can do other than have like five fights in a row like that. And then maybe they might take them off a few cards just to let them breathe a little and maybe some time off. But they've proven themselves. All those guys, Peterson, Dean, Beltran, Herzog, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I love the process of how slowly but surely, you know, like our good friend Frank Trigg, he's doing the amateur shows. Hey, look, Trigg finally made it to a Bellator show. Hey, look, he's on the main card of a Bellator show or whatever. Or our listener friend Aaron from Texas, same thing. I'm doing a smoker. I'm doing an amateur. Hey, look, he's on LFA, Access TV. You know, there's just this process of getting there. But once you get there, you've pretty much earned your stripes. Now, has there been a few refs that have made it there and it didn't work out? Yeah, of course. Mazzagatti, Yamasaki. And for the most part, those guys called a lot of fights right.
Championship
fights. It's just that they had a couple where it was wrong. And then once they get that spotlight on them from Dana White, it can just go even more wrong, you know?
Do you think
but it doesn't mean that Yamasaki is not an actual black belt. He's just interpreted the rules a little bit different. And those two actually came through before I think MMA reffing and judging was as polished as it is now. We're talking Yamasaki was what, probably 15 years ago when all this started to go down. Oh, sorry. Mazzagatti. Yamasaki was more in the last 5 to 10 year window.
Do you think they carry momentum as a team or individually?
The refs?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I would say both. I say there's some refs that can maybe go years without having to hear any controversy, and that's when we all go, hey, have you noticed Herzog or Beltran? You know, that guy, I hope that guy calls the main event. He's been on a roll or whatever. And then there can be a few weekends back-to-back where, yeah, somebody just throws this big old blanket and goes, MMA refs suck. We need better MMA judges. And it's all of them. And there could be like three or four of them sitting there going, what the fuck? Show me the last time I fucked up. Show me a scorecard that you got a problem with. But nope, this wide net was cast.
I wonder if what happens with Jason Herzog can transfer over to Mike Beltran the following card. You know, he sees the way people reacted to Herzog and says, oh man, I don't want to make that mistake. I don't want to be that guy. And maybe he stops a fight shorter than normal because he doesn't want to be in that same boat or something. You know, like I wonder if that happens.
No, I bet you they talk about it on Monday, and when they go in,
like a makeup call, right? In football. Almost like a makeup call.
No, because I think they're all reasonable enough to know this is a new set of fighters. This is a new night. It's not the same day. Like maybe in the same fight, let's say at the end of round one, you sneak in a quick shot. You know, the bell rings, ding, boom, you catch me. And the referee warns you, hey, you caught George at the end, you know. And then at the end of round two, maybe I catch you. Hey, what the hell? You know, I think if you bitch at me, I think the ref could go, come on, you got one in early. You guys both walk back to your corners. It's even now. Like I could see something like that, similar to what you just said, like the basketball makeup call or football makeup call or whatever. But from one fight night to the next, like I think they try to stick more to what I've always described as the cornerback rule. You got burned, you got to shake it off. You know, this guy burned you deep for 50 yards on a bomb. Mm-hmm. You got to shake it off and come back and play the way you've always played. Now, if he burns you four times, then yeah, we mean to maybe need to take you off the field and bring in the backup or something like that. And that's comparable to, boy, you've had a couple nights in a row. Hey, maybe you should sit this one out or maybe go to the prelims or something. But like I say, to get to the spot they're at, I think it takes a lot of experience, and they're not just giving it. they don't give it to him. Hell, in fact, Herzog, who I've hailed as the top ref for the last year or so, or maybe two, I think when we ran into him over there at, what was it called? The grappling?
Contenders series, huh?
Quintet.
Oh, Quintet?
Yeah, didn't we discuss the fact that he had just had his first UFC main event?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So within the last year, he's only had his first UFC event. That's how, like, precious those jobs are, you know, that some of these refs get and hold on to. Mergliotta caught a lot of grief a few years ago. You know, he was on a little bit of a run. It sure does. But that said, the event went down. Overeem defeated Walt Harris. And Overeem, look, at 40 years old, because I think he turned 40 right at the stroke of midnight, he's saying he's not done and wants another title shot. And look, he fights in a division where you only need about two or three in a row, and you're right back there. That's where Francis Ngannou sits. He's won four in a row, and he could have got it off the three in a row that he had, but he just won a fourth in a row, and he could get the winner of Miocic and Cormier. Curtis Blaydes, he's rumored to fight Alexander Volkov. He's won three in a row since getting starched by Ngannou for the second time. Well, guess what? If Miocic gets stripped and Cormier fights Ngannou, then now Blaydes is sitting in that spot. So it just kind of goes on and on. Overeem's lost to both guys, but yeah, perhaps he'll get a shot. We'll see. Claudia Gadelha defeated Angela Hill. Dan Ige defeated Edson Barbosa. Christoph Jocko defeated Eric Anders. And Song Yadong defeated Marlon Vera. They all went to a decision. The first two were split. Jocko and Anders, I think, was pretty clear, but the other three had heavy judges controversy. Let's start with Gadelha versus Hill. That was the co-main event. Did you score it for Gadelha? She won two judges' scorecards, and one went to Hill.
I didn't. I scored it for Hill. It was one of those where at the end it felt like the fight was somewhat close, but I felt like the right call was Hill. Like I didn't really look around the room and go, everybody else feeling me? It didn't have that type of feeling.
She had the more voluminous attack. Mm-hmm. Whereas Gadelha, I felt like, landed a couple of the heavier punches. I would have been okay had they said Hill. Somebody asked me this on Facebook. How'd you score it? And I told him, Gadelha by a hair. But to be clear, I had my money goggles on because I had her as a play. You know what I mean? A parlay or whatever. So maybe as they were reading it, I was just like, come on. You know, you cross your fingers and... But I also had that uncertainty because I knew what Hill had done. Hill had fought a really nice fight. The fight rarely hit the ground. And because of it, that's what put Hill, you know, in play because she seemed to be quicker and just more voluminous. She had more volume in her attack. And I think that could have definitely made the difference. She called out Esparza because Esparza had called her out a few nights ago. Then Esparza went on to say, just this time, don't bring the grease. So something's building up there. And you know what? I don't think I'm that into rematches when it doesn't really matter what's happening. But that foursome at the top that I was talking about, Andrade, Namajunas, Jan Jacek, and Willy Zhang, leave them alone. Let them do like the four kings in the 80s in boxing. For like another 2 years while all these chicks figure out, hey, well, who's the next set? You know, Ansarov's having a baby. Suarez, his neck's still fucked up. So if the rest just kind of have to rinse and repeat, I'm okay with it.
It kind of reminds me of what happened in the heavyweight division with Ben Rothwell's call out at the end, right? Like I feel
he
like...
He wanted Olenek and Arlovski wanted Rothwell.
Yeah.
And Arlovski and Rothwell
felt like they were saying, look, we get it. We're not in that mix up there, so let's just do this. And I think that's kind of where they were at.
Yeah.
In their call out.
What about Ige Barbosa? How'd you score that one?
I thought Barbosa won the fight. That one I felt was a little bit closer, but I thought Barbosa had won.
This one I remember a little more vividly than the other ones. And what I remember is Barbosa winning round one, Ige winning a lot of round two, but then a dumb takedown that he almost had a part of with Barbosa finishing strong. I remember going, ooh, he could be down to nothing going into round three. But I do remember there being more duration on the side of Ige being the stronger fighter in round two. It's just Barbosa had a good close, and in no way was I saying Ige was winning by a landslide before the fight hit the ground. So I knew okay, keep that in the chamber. You know, like, remember that. Let's see what happens in round three. Because if round three comes and there's a knockout, we don't have to worry about it. Round three didn't come, but Ige won it. And sure enough, you know, I think that's what it boiled down to. I also scored it for Ige. Little Extreme Couture homering. That one, I think I may have, I don't, I can't remember it being a part of a parlay or anything on the Ige side. So I was just kind of watching it as a fan, and boy, was I was enthralled, dude. That was a good fight. Mm-hmm. I will admit this. When I first heard the announcement, I didn't like the match for Dan. I was like, dear God, Barbosa's like, fuck.
On the timeline,
everybody.
Too.
Everybody. Yeah, exactly. Everybody. And has Ige improved that much? Hell yeah, he's improved. The striking just keeps getting better and better and better. There was times when he was outstriking Barbosa. So that kid, when he went on to call out everyone, he said Cater and Zabit and whoever, he's ready for all of them. I believe it, man. No doubt.
Well, no, yeah, it's no choice.
I still felt like there was like one more level that he still needed to continue improving. Don't rush yourself or whatever. But man, that dude's slick. Now that said, you know, him coming from a wrestling background and his ground game, just keep improving on all of it. You know what I mean? Barbosa's tough to take down. You know, so it's not like you can say Ige's got to shore up his wrestling. No, he's been a wrestler all his life. I think Barbosa's just tough to take down. Mm-hmm. I mean, fuck Habib for crying out loud. You know what I mean? But anyway, last one, Yadong and Vera.
I think out of the three, that one probably bothered me the most. That one, I thought Cheeto won that fight. I thought he won it. I thought it was one of those situations where you don't even look around and go, hey, were y'all on the same page here? I thought it was very clear.
I felt pretty good about it, too.
It ruins the streak. It sucks.
Yeah. Except I think I had a little shred of doubt with anything can happen. But I felt pretty comfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. And when they didn't call it for him, boy, he was pissed. He didn't want to shake anyone's hands. I think he flipped the bird. Faber was like, hey, whoa, you know, what's going on? Because Faber almost fought him. Faber weighed in, folks, on Friday because Yadong was having visa issues. And I guess they cleared him up at the end. But that's why if you caught Faber on a scale, that's what happened. Now, he would have weighed in as a lightweight because he weighed in 153. And I don't know if they have the 10% rule in Jacksonville or what could have happened. But if you saw him weighing in, it was for real. Yadong managed to get in there and fight. And that guy's only 20 or 22.
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah, bright future for him. He wins, and I don't think Vera will have problems picking up another good contender fight. He's earned it. It's just it was a close one. Now, let me just tell you real quick before we go on. MMA Decisions had it like this. Gadelha versus Hill, it was about 75% for Hill when we go to the media scores. You said Hill, I said Gadelha, so most people agreed with you. Ige Barbosa. That one was really split. That one was really a landslide. All but two had it for Barbosa. This is like 18-2 mm-hmm. for media scores. Barbosa's already filed an appeal and been denied.
This is what kind of cracks me up, though. I don't like that fighters can say, oh, what did the media know? They've never gotten in the cage, this and that. But how many of them quote MMA decisions when the decision doesn't go their way? And then they go, have you seen how lopsided the scoring is? That's a good point. I don't know if that works.
That's a good point. I'm starting to just leave them alone. I think it's so typical to just say it, but it applies. Fighters, we don't know how they're wired. They're, you know, they think on another wavelength than we do. That's just them. You know, when the fans are with them, I got the greatest fans in the world. When they're on a bad run, fuck the fans. Mm-hmm. So that's how that went down, folks, on the main card. I'll go real quick through the rest of the card. This was the third fight card in Jacksonville in 8 days. Miguel Baeza, who almost got clipped by Matt Brown, he came back and beat Matt Brown. Kevin Holland defeated Fluffy Anthony Hernandez. Pretty quick, too, man. I thought I was going to enjoy that fight a lot longer than
me, too.
Giga Chikadze defeated Irwin Rivera. Rivera stepped in late notice and fought well, by the way. He had a lot of heart, man. Nate Landwehr defeated Darren Elkins. The damage was damaged. Courtney Casey defeated Mara Romero Barella. Submitted her in round one. And Rodrigo Nascimento defeated Dontel Mays. The bonuses went to the following. Performance of the night, Baeza and Casey. Fight of the night, Yadong and Vera. Man. That the toughest one was fight of the night because yep. Barbosa and Ige was a barn burner too, man.
Even Landwehr and Elkins was fun.
Mm-hmm. They had a tough job there figuring out what needed to happen. All right. Well, attendance. You haven't been doing well in the last two. This is your last chance. See if you can clear your name. Attendance, guess.
This is going to be tough. I guess if you were to take the average attendance... And maybe because of COVID, divide it in half and then just minus everything, I would say zero.
Dude, you got it right.
Oh, finally.
Yeah. How about the gate?
Oh, the gate's a little bit tougher because you think about how many people are just willing to go out and watch a card these days and all the rules. I mean, let's just go with zero, too.
Two for two. Good job, Goz. Now, just to clear something up. The fight card that happened on Saturday was the one that was supposed to happen in San Diego with Dan Hooker and Dustin Poirier. The one that happened on Wednesday was the one that was supposed to happen in late April. It kept the same main event of Anthony Smith and Glover Teixeira. And then the one that happened the Saturday before, that was supposed to happen in Brooklyn, New York with Habib and Tony. Then it became Tony versus Justin Gaethje on Native American soil at Tachi Palace in California on the same date. Then that got pushed back to last Saturday in Jacksonville, Florida. So we had all three fight cards in Jacksonville, Florida. We had said that May 23rd was looking like back in Las Vegas, but we felt certain about May 23rd. Well, guess what? We're wrong. It's now going to be May 30th, and it's still looking like maybe Las Vegas. Fight Island, I don't know that they'll be ready for June 6th. They're promoting a pay-per-view on June 6th. But the two ladies that are in the main event can fight in America. Even though they're foreigners, they will be able to fight in America. So I don't know where that one's going to take place, but it doesn't sound like Fight Island is going to be ready yet. However, it's still being worked on and touted, and it seems to be an immediate part of the UFC's future. It's just that I would probably think probably debuting in the month of July. Mm-hmm. So that now, if you're wondering about like, what about Volkanovski and Vera and Izzy and yeah, there you go, folks. Fill in the blanks there. All right. So let's talk about some of the latest news. Here was some good news, goes a little late, 4 years late, but deserved. Notice I didn't say well-deserved. Kevin Randleman is now part of the Pioneer Wing in the UFC's Hall of Fame. I know a lot of you are like, what the fuck? Why not well-deserved? Well, because he was 17 and 16. He was a UFC heavyweight champ. He did defend his belt once. He won a couple tournaments along the way, not in the UFC. I told Goz the other day he was a UFC tournament winner. I was wrong. He actually won some tournaments in Brazil, but they weren't, but they were prestigious at the time. They were like NHB or whatever. But, you know, again, that 17 and 16 record, I think he might have trouble if there was an independent MMA Hall of Fame. However, the UFC Hall of Fame has a little bit of a lower bar, and you're not going to put in Boss Rudin without putting in Calvin Randleman, because he could have been a champion. You know, that could have been part of his resume as well, that fight. And you're also not going to put in Kazushi Sakuraba and Maurice Smith and a few of the others that have gone in and not put Kevin Randleman. With that, and when you look at it that way, it's deserved. And probably well-deserved because, hey, those were the days where everybody was fighting everywhere. There was no politics. There was no protection or nothing. Like, it was just like, go, go, go. You know, and he definitely beat some good fighters along the way. His biggest one probably being, aside from his championship, the Crow Cop knockout that he had. I mean, how do you forget that one? So, again, I know that if there's some historians and you talk about an MMA Hall of Fame, I don't know that. I'm not sure if Kevin Randleman would get in, but in the UFC Hall of Fame, he definitely should get in.
When you explain it that way, it makes sense. When you think overall and you look at the way other Hall of Fames are made up, Kevin Randleman was good, but he wasn't great. And I think that's what these Hall of Fames are all about. People that just kind of transcend time, and you look at their stats and you go, oh my God. I mean, it's very tough for an outsider probably to look in and go, what? This guy's like one fight over 500. How could he possibly be in your Hall of Fame? So when you look at the way they've been doing things, it makes sense. But overall, I think it's a little confusing for outsiders looking in.
You know, the other day, don't ask me how, but I stumbled across Steve Garvey's name.
How?
Really? I think it was just...
Did you look at the picture?
What picture?
He came in the studio.
No. I forget. I was going to try and remember, but I just thought to myself, I go, man, I remember that dude. He was good for the Dodgers, but I think it had something to do with Padres, and that's why I was like, Padres? Like, he's retired as a Padre, but not as a Dodger. And I was like, so I went to go back to see where more of his career was. More of his career was with the Dodgers, and he did win one title with the Dodgers, the 81 title. None with the Padres, though he did go to the World Series. But then I just remember going, man, he was like one of my idols growing up. He was this just clean-cut guy with big old forearms and a cool haircut at the time. And I was wondering if he was in the Hall of Fame. He hasn't made it, and I don't know if he will. I think Kevin Randleman's similar, where he's got some stats that pop out at you, mm-hmm. you know, and he has a name. But then when you look at it and go, oh, I get it, because there's just this level of greatness, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have 600 home runs or 500. I think he had 350. Mm-hmm. Same with RBIs. He was kind of the Iron Man. You know how in the American League, the other guy, Cal Ripken, won like 2,400 games? Garvey made it to like 1,300. Great defender. He had a gold glove and all that. But anyway, so I'm just going to blast through some of this other stuff. Nate Landwehr. A lot of you are probably going, who's that big mouth that fought on Saturday night? Well, that was Kevin Holland. But the other guy, the white guy, was Nate Landwehr. Goes, you and I were like, oh, that dude. Because we've mm-hmm. been covering him for about 5 years when he's been fighting in Russia. He finally made it to the UFC. He lost his opening bout, his debut bout. But he came back. And I was not surprised that he beat Elkins. Not to take a shot at Elkins. It's just that I just knew that if he can avoid the ground, he's pretty good, man.
Yeah. And he could talk a good game. For us, I think it reminded me a lot of Conor McGregor. Having him on in another organization and just getting a kick out of him. So when he came over to the UFC, I kind of gave the people the, hey, watch out for this guy. He's kind of tough. It didn't really go his way. But now this fight, I think you got to see a little bit more of the Nate Landwehr that we've been expecting. Oh, he's a
cocky white boy from Tennessee. Did you see when he had his hands behind his back?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, and I thought, man, don't let that go overboard, because at times Elkins was... You know, he was showing off a little bit of offense, but he hasn't done the type of improvements like Ige, for example. Both guys, you know, wrestlers that have improved in other facets of the game, but Elkins just couldn't hang with him in the striking mm-hmm. department. And so Nate Landwehr wins, and he definitely got Dana White's attention. I mean, how could he not? Dana White was one of the few in attendance.
I thought he might have won over the fight of the night. The way, I mean, just how bloodied up and battered. Nate, not as bad, but Elkins and the way they were calling it. And that's everything that Dana ever wants in fights. I thought for sure he was going to lock it up, especially when he was actually calling for it to Dana, both guys. But it was a great
night of fights. Maybe if they had a Gilbert and Diego moment, mm-hmm. Max Lamas moment, like at the end. Maybe just something memorable like that. Who knows? And it also helps when you're one of the last fights of the night. So John Jones, of course, always tweeting. And he actually let Anthony Smith have it. I'm not sure we discussed it on Saturday, but he said Teixeira could basically go in and rob Anthony Smith's house and Smith couldn't stop him, something like that. But that's not what I meant. He's tweeting because he's been linked up with Ngannou a lot. Him and Ngannou kind of went back and forth. But his latest tweet was, he just says his career is about to blow up, and he references the rematches with Reyes and Santos, Blachowicz, you know, and everything else that's out there. Maybe Teixeira again. So Jones and McGregor, boy, they're two of the most active guys, and they're all over the place. It's hard to really see what figure out what they're saying and doing.
Well, it's weird because John is expecting to blow up, but at the same time, I think he's telling the UFC, you better pay me or else. And again, there's just not very many people that can do that. If John Jones, in a way, he kind of did go away. Like, he had fights where some of them ended up being good fights, but before that, nobody was saying, Thiago Santos is going to be the guy. This is the guy that's going to take it away from him. We weren't saying that. A lot of people felt like Reyes had a decent shot, but I don't know that if you go back and look at staff picks that everybody picked John Jones. So he could go away as well, and the UFC just keeps marching on. So I don't know. I just don't know the UFC is being a company that's going to cave. So I think maybe John can get a little bit more money, but I don't know that he can get a lot more money and hold the company for hostage.
Yeah. Well, this will lead into another thing. Mike Tyson and Francis Ngannou had a chat. Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson, I believe, is the name of the podcast. Ngannou was a guest of it, and Tyson was telling him, amp it up a little bit. If you have an angle there with Jones, pick up steam there a little bit. Talk some trash. He told him, quote, you got to go out there and make challenges. You've got to make your challenge here. Go and talk. Make challenges with these guys. Put them on television shows. Why am I not fighting? I know you're scared. You should go. Everybody's scared of me in the UFC. You know, he was kind of telling him, you're a kind man, but at some point, you know, press a little bit.
I agree with that a little bit.
Yeah, and when you hear it from him, it's hard to go, wow, this guy don't get it. He can take a, you know, shot at the media. I'm not saying he does, but you can always say something about the media, the fans, but when somebody like Mike Tyson says it, you know, you gotta go home and give it a good listen, and if you decide not to take the advice, that's fine too. But that's one where you like think about it, you know, deep thinking for a good 24 hours, and maybe you go out there and maybe you show a little bit of that.
Well, the only point that I disagree with that where I don't like that, and I've seen this happen a lot, is in the case of John Jones. I just think it's silly when the guy that weighs more is chirping and calling out the guy that weighs less. Now, granted, John's the one that started it, but for Francis to kind of like bait him in any way would be silly to me, because you're supposed to beat that guy. You know, it's not a really good situation for him, I think. I would probably lay off of that one, and I'd more direct my call outs to the heavyweights.
And Francis, kind is a good word for him, because his demeanor is really soft spoken. You know, he doesn't have like a strong, raspy voice, something like, you know, get over here, you know, and say it to my face. Nothing like that.
Sound like a He-Man character.
Keep it short and sweet. You know what I mean? I'm the scariest dude on the planet. You know it. You don't want these problems. You know, something like that on Twitter. Boom. So, you know, he says it, and that's it. Habib is one of the masters of that. Moving on. Tony Ferguson goes, remember he was breakdancing like a day or two after being in the hospital?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to avoid the orbital bone surgery. Do you know anything about that part of the body? Can you just avoid it? It just heals on its own? I mean, I guess it does, but
yeah.
Does it heal the way you want it to? I mean, when you're in the career of face punching?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I would imagine.
Because remember Josh Koscheck, a few of those guys that have had that injury, how they're always wiping or their hands always like in the area of that injury, you know what I mean?
Because, I mean, it's definitely shocking something like that happens. But I would imagine that a surgery, maybe it's just one of those where they told him, look, you get the surgery, you're back in 4 months. You don't, you're back in six. You know, maybe it's one of those where you went, yeah, well, for 2 months, I'm not going to go in there and put my body through something like that.
True. I know I'm jumping around here, but this was interesting too over the weekend. Curtis Blaydes is not feeling it about Miocic saying, I can't train. I'm not ready to go. He's like, everybody else is training. Everybody else is figuring it out. You got to figure it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's starting to put a little bit of pressure. But since last week, Miocic has been saying, all right, all right. So we're hoping to get that date soon of Miocic versus Cormier. But it was interesting to hear Blade say it, because I think it was something that I was kind of saying. His direct quote was, Stipe's tripping if he thinks people believe he can't train because his coach can't open up. That's kind of what I was thinking, except I'm not a fighter, so carries more weight when someone like Blades is saying. But that's all I was seeing all over during this pandemic, was different fighters figuring out a way to get it in.
But it usually starts off with, all due respect to the first responder, but...
Yeah, well, that's something that he definitely had. Justin Gaethje's flipping the tables on Conor McGregor. Goes, he's saying this dude's out there clout chasing. He's saying he needs to get on his knees now and beg for a shot. That said, I still think he feels like it's him versus Khabib, but he's saying, go fight Poirier now. For the last 3 years, I was trying to fight you, and you didn't want none. Stop trying to chase my clout.
I think it's funny. He's giving him a taste of his own medicine, and it's one of those where, if you're Conor, you kind of just got to take it at this point. I mean, you're going to want to fire back because you want to build up that potential matchup. But, I mean, I thought it was pretty clear that Conor probably did have his chance to fight Justin, and he didn't want that fight. So there's a lot of ammo in Justin Gaethje's gun right now.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick here, two more things I want to discuss. This one will be a quick one. Kevin Holland versus Marvin Vittori, are you into it?
Yes, because it's got heat.
Yeah.
Because
I like both Marvin guys. It sucks to see that. Yeah, Marvin hasn't fought, but Holland did fight. But Holland had talked about maybe going to welterweight. Vittori certainly isn't a welterweight. But, hey, if they can make this one happen, they're both in the States, maybe we can get this one sooner rather than later.
I like it. I would want
to see. Apparently, they said they've met before. They've shaken hands. And I guess Vittori maybe went to social media and said some stuff that pissed off Big Mouth. Lastly, this one's a big one, folks. Henry Cejudo's manager, Ali Abdelaziz, did an interview. He says he doesn't expect Cejudo's retirement to last long. Now, he never said, oh, yeah, it was a negotiating tactic or anything like that. He just feels like he's managed enough careers to know that he sees a lot of fighters go through that where they feel like, yeah, I think I'm done. And then 2 weeks later, who's next? You know what I mean? And that's what he thinks. He thinks Cejudo's going to fight again. He says he's reaching his prime. He's at his prime. Why would he leave then? What do you think of all that?
I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't know.
It's a powerful statement. Like if Cejudo really wanted nothing to fight with fighting, or if it was a negotiation tactic, you know, did that in any way mess that plan up or trip that plan up a little?
I think it's, you can't see me do it right now, but I think it's one of those eye winks. I think it's pretty clear Henry Cejudo is going to be back. I would be shocked if that was really the end for him. Nobody wants to go out that way.
The only thing I can think of was now they're back in Vegas. They're going to have their matchmaker meeting on Tuesday, and then they're going to go, okay, let's lay out the three cards. What happened? Let's, you know, is Jacare okay? Big Mouth and Vittori? Did Stipe get going? They're going to kind of clean up all the messes that have been made, all the news that's out there. Okay, well, so where do we sit with Cejudo? So maybe that's Ali's way of maybe buying his clan a little bit of time. Maybe. Don't strip him yet. It's not vacant yet. Let's let Henry go on a little bit of a vacation, you know, get laid, spend some money. Yeah, get that check. Yeah, he alluded to the check, too. That was a big check, apparently. They did well on UFC 249, so maybe Henry will take a look at that and go, wait, I get to smoke somebody and I get this check. I might have a few more of those left. So that might be the little game. And I'm not going to go back on what I said. If you look at what a few of these managers, when you go through the salary list, a few of the fighters seem to always stand out. Vicente Luque, man, 180, 90 and 90. That to me was like, wow, good for him. And who's his manager? Ali Abdelaziz. So, you know, don't shortchange Ali and his abilities. All right, we're gonna get on out of here. We got Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Sportscaster. You know, more of the news that comes out of these last 8 days, or more specifically this last Saturday, we'll address it then. It's a 1 hour version of the MMA Junkie Radio show / podcast, except with video. So go to sportscaster.com/ MMA Junkie, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, every Wednesday in May. It's the MMA Junkie Radio Show on Sportscaster. Sportscaster is SPORTSCASTR. There's no E in caster. Follow us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George, and Goes is at The Goes. That's both for Twitter and Instagram, and the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And remember, folks, there's no show on Saturday, but it looks like the UFC is coming back on the 30th. So keep an eye on that. The rankings report is back. We're going to do spinning back click later. And on the website, look for anything that says MMA Junkie Radio, George Goes, whatever. Those are our video interviews that we do for fighters. So for those of you that say, I missed the radio show. You guys used to interview fighters. Man, there's some really, really good ones. They're in the site. So keep an eye out for those. Recently, we caught up with Phil Davis, Benson Henderson, Vitor Belfort, Sage Northcutt. So we're doing our part in the video world now that everything's turned to with media. All right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Enjoy your Monday. Have a nice week. Stay safe. Stay indoors if they ask you to. Stay sane. That's a real important one, but always be a champion.